Well, there are some events that are so big and so significant that they become events that you don't really need to describe them or to give any details. You just need to say a word and everyone knows exactly what you're talking about. Modern events like Gallipoli or 9/11 or COVID, hugely significant events that have changed our world. Now, some events like that are terrible events which we grieve. Others are wonderful events which we celebrate. And often, whether it's a terrible event to grieve or a wonderful event to celebrate often depends on where you stand in relation to it. And today, in the book of Isaiah, what we've just heard in our Bible readings is one of those kind of events. It's recorded here for us in Isaiah chapter 37, and that's our focus today. And you'll notice, as it's printed out there in the newsletter, that it's given two names. You notice that in the headings, you could call it Jerusalem's deliverance, or you could call it Sennacherib's fall. Because for some, for those in Jerusalem, it was an amazing, miraculous event that brought salvation. For others, for Assyria, it was a terrifying event that brought judgment. And it's this event that we're going to think about just for a few minutes now. And it's my hope that on this celebration Sunday, that we might see clearly that how this event actually points us toward an even more significant event, which is cause for great celebration for us today. So I'd love for you to look on there at the Bible reading that's printed in the booklet. And what you might notice is that there's three headings on the way through our chapter, and that's a pretty good way to tackle this chapter. The first section there, verses 1 to 13, that's all about the build-up to this event. The second section, verses 14 to 20, is all about a crucial decision that determines the outcome of the event. And the last section, from verse 21 to the end, tells us about this salvation event to celebrate. So firstly, the build-up. Now, we've been in Isaiah for a couple of months now here at St Aidan, so there's already been a lot of build-up. And everything really that we've been looking at so far has been leading up to this event. Up to this point, we've listened to 35 chapters of poetry and prophecy from Isaiah. And if we've been listening carefully, we'll know that the event that we come to today is no surprise for Judah. Because ever since chapter 1 of Isaiah, God's been telling Judah that this event is coming. He's been telling them that Assyria is coming. And he's been telling them how they are to respond when they do come. He's been telling them that if they turn to God for help, then he will deliver his people, he will protect and shield Jerusalem. Isaiah has promised that if they look to God for help, then he will miraculously save them. So there's been 35 chapters all building up to this moment. And then chapter 36 kicks it off. We didn't read that chapter today, but what happens there is that the Assyrian army surges down from the north and they crush everyone who stands in their way. And they now arrive at Jerusalem's front doorstep. And the king of Assyria, Sennacherib, he sends his messenger. That was what was just acted out for us. He sends his messenger who stands in front of this massive undefeated army, and he calls out to Jerusalem to just face facts and give up. He said, "Haven't you seen the size of our army? Haven't you heard what we've done to every other nation that has not surrendered? Just come out with your hands up and everyone will be better off." And so that brings us to chapter 37, which begins like this. Take a look now in verse 1 of chapter 37. It says, "When Hezekiah heard this, he tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and went into the temple of the Lord." Now, the big question revolving around this whole event is, what is Hezekiah, the king of Jerusalem, going to do? So is he going to trust in God's promise of a miraculous rescue, or should he just surrender? Well, it's a good sign here that in his distress, Hezekiah goes into the temple of the Lord. It's also a good sign in verse 2 that he asks Isaiah to pray for him. It's maybe not such a good sign there in verse 4 that as he responds to Isaiah, he says that it may be that the Lord your God will hear. And that doesn't sound very confident, does it? It sounds kind of as if Hezekiah isn't even counting Isaiah's God as his own. But if we detect that Isaiah is a bit unsure, or Hezekiah is a bit unsure, God, on the other hand, speaks very clearly and very decisively about what he will bring about. So see what God says through Isaiah from verse 6. Isaiah said to them, "Tell your master, this is what the Lord says. Do not be afraid of what you have heard, those words with which the underlings of the king of Assyria have blasphemed me. Listen, when he hears a certain report, I will make him want to return to his own country, and there I will have him cut down with the sword." And in fact, as soon as God says this, well, things immediately start to look up. In verse 9, the king of Assyria hears a report about the king of Egypt stirring up some trouble elsewhere, and he withdraws from Jerusalem to go and deal with them. Good news. However, before he goes, Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, he leaves kind of this final message by way of letter for Hezekiah, telling him not to get his hopes up too much. Verse 10, he says, "Do not let the God you depend on deceive you when he says, 'Jerusalem will not be given into the hands of the king of Assyria.' Surely you have heard what the kings of Assyria have done to all the countries, destroying them completely. And will you be delivered? Did the gods of the nations that were destroyed by my predecessors deliver them?" So this delay here to go off and beat up Egypt, which, by the way, they did very comprehensively, it only sounds like it's made Sennacherib even more determined. "I'll be back," he's saying. "And when I come back, there's going to be trouble." So it really is crunch time. What is Hezekiah going to choose? Is he going to trust God and that promise of a miraculous salvation, a salvation that almost sounds too good to be true, or should he just surrender? What will he choose? Well, we now come to a crucial decision that determines the event in verse 14. See verse 14. It says, "Hezekiah received the letter from the messengers and read it. And then he went up to the temple of the Lord and he spread it out before the Lord. And Hezekiah prayed to the Lord." Now, this is a very significant and I think also a very moving moment. As Hezekiah enters the temple and physically spreads out this threatening letter from the king of Assyria, maybe on the floor of the temple. I mean, it's such a clear display of faith as he surrenders himself, not to Assyria, but to God's will and to God's power and God's help. I mean, here is a picture of a king who is totally relying on God. And we notice now that he's no longer asking Isaiah to pray for him. Now Hezekiah the king is praying. And it's a magnificent prayer. So let me read it again from verse 16. He prays this: "Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, enthroned between the cherubim, you alone are God over all the kingdoms of the earth. You have made heaven and earth. Give ear, Lord, and hear. Open your eyes, Lord, and see. Listen to all the words Sennacherib has sent to ridicule the living God. It is true, Lord, that the Assyrian kings have laid waste all these people and their lands. They have thrown their gods into the fire and destroyed them, for they were not gods, but only wood and stone fashioned by human hands. Now, Lord our God, deliver us from his hand, so that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that you, Lord, are the only God." Now in this prayer we see clearly that Hezekiah has made his choice. He is going to entrust himself totally to God. And you notice that the focus of his prayer here, the main focus is not even really about being saved from the Assyrian army. Instead, the focus is all about God and his honor and his glory. His prayer is that the one true God might be seen by all the kingdoms of the earth for who he is, that everyone on earth might know that he is the one true God, that he is the only God, the maker of heaven and earth, the God over all the kingdoms of the earth. This is a prayer that is all about God, all about his reputation, that his greatness would be known among the nations. It's a prayer that is very inspiring, and I imagine that if your prayer life is anything like mine, then it's probably also a prayer that is very humbling and rebuking. Because when I think about my prayer life and how often it is just full of praying for this and that, that God would do for me, well, here is a prayer that reminds me that there are far bigger concerns in the world than just what is going on for me. Hezekiah is concerned and he prays for what is far more important and says, God, would you do whatever is needed so that all the kingdoms of the earth might know your name? That is a good prayer. It's a prayer worth imitating. And today we're just going to have a slightly extended prayer time a little bit later to pray like this, and to ask God to be honoured and to be made known through our church. But not only is it a prayer worth copying, it's also a prayer that represents here a crucial choice. Because the person praying this is not just anyone, this is the King of God's people. And that's why there's been so much build-up to this moment. Because whatever the King of God's people decides, that will have huge implications for God's people. And in particular, what we now see through the rest of the chapter is that when the King of God's people humbly chooses to seek God's honour before anything else, well, what that leads to is a salvation event to celebrate. So take a look as we keep reading, and we discover the consequences that flow from this choice from King Hezekiah in verse 21. It says, "Then Isaiah, son of Amos, sent a message to Hezekiah. This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Because you have prayed to me concerning Sennacherib, king of Assyria, this is the word the Lord has spoken against him. Virgin daughter Zion despises and mocks you. Daughter Jerusalem tosses her head as you flee." And jump down to verse 29, where the consequences are now laid out very clearly for the king of Assyria. God says, "Because you rage against me, and because your insolence has reached my ears, I'll put my hook in your nose and my bit in your mouth, and I'll make you return by the way you came." God is saying that Sennacherib will be pathetically led home like a dog on a lead with its tail between its legs. And so much so that God now tells Hezekiah that within 3 years, you won't even know that Sennacherib had been here. The land will be back to normal and you can grow crops again. And more than that, from verse 31, see how God's people will be safe there. Verse 31 over the page. "Once more, a remnant of the kingdom of Judah will take root below and bear fruit above. For out of Jerusalem will come a remnant, and out of Mount Zion a band of survivors. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this." Friends, do you see the consequence of King Hezekiah's choice to honour God and to put his trust in him? I mean, this is what we've heard so much about in these early chapters of Isaiah, of how God will plant a new people, how a new holy seed will grow, a shoot will spring up, a branch will bear fruit, and they will be a new transformed people of God who live for his honour and his praise. And you notice here how it all hinges on one thing, on the obedience of God's King. Because throughout Israel's history, it's really just been one bad king after another. And that's what's gotten them into this mess. But now, when a king chooses to obey, chooses to trust God, chooses to honour God, well, that is when truly amazing things can begin to happen. That is when God's plans and promises can begin to come true. That's when God's blessings can begin to flow to his people and to the whole world. And if you doubt that, well, just check out what eventually happens to Sennacherib from verse 33. It says, "Therefore, this is what the Lord says concerning Assyria, the king of Assyria, he will not enter this city or shoot an arrow here. He will not come before it with shield or build a siege ramp against it. By the way that he came, he will return. He will not enter this city, declares the Lord. I will defend this city and save it for my sake and for the sake of David my servant. And then the angel of the Lord went out and put to death 185,000 in the Assyrian camp. And when the people got up the next morning, there were all the dead bodies. And so Sennacherib, king of Assyria, broke camp and withdrew. He returned to Nineveh and stayed there. And one day while he was worshipping in the temple of his god Nisroch, his sons Adrammelech and Sherezer killed him with the sword, and they escaped to the land of Ararat, and Esarhaddon, his son, succeeded him as king. So after all of his boasting, well, the army of Assyria and King Sennacherib, they come to a swift and humiliating end. But as you think back over this event, as you think back across this chapter, well, what is it that was the turning point? What is it that changes the course of events so that the enemies of God are thoroughly defeated and the people of God are miraculously delivered? Well, the whole thing turns on verse 20. It was that choice to trust God and that prayer for God to be honored above all else. Take a look at it again, verse 20. This is Hezekiah's prayer. Now, Lord our God, deliver us from his hand so that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that you, Lord, are the only God. So that's what changes everything. When the king of God's people chooses to trust in what God says and acts for God's honor above all else, when God's king decides that, then extraordinary things start to happen for God's people. And I hope that as I say that you can begin to see the relevance of this chapter for us here today. Because I hope that all of this talk about God's king choosing to trust God, well, hopefully your mind is racing ahead to think about another king. Because what this event points us forward to is the far greater king. A king who also had to decide in very difficult circumstances whether or not to trust God. I mean, think of him in the Garden of Gethsemane, as he trembled in fear about the choice that lay before him, as he sweated drops of blood because of what he would have to endure. And yet in the garden he prayed, like Hezekiah prayed, Father, not my will, but yours be done. Not my honour, but your honour. And with that conviction, our King Jesus went to the cross, bearing our judgment and paying the terrible price for our sin. And so instead of the angel of the Lord being sent to destroy, the Son of God comes to give his life to save sinners. And it results in the most significant event that the world has ever seen, as on the third day, his followers woke to the news that he was alive, that he had defeated sin and death. And from that event began a kingdom that now reaches to the ends of the earth. A kingdom where all the peoples of the earth are invited to come and to know the Lord, the only God. A kingdom where people are offered forgiveness and hope and purpose. A kingdom whose citizens are delivered from the power of sin and death. A kingdom of people who are adopted into God's own family and gifted God's own spirit in their lives. And that is the kingdom that we belong to. We have a kingdom and we have a king to celebrate. Friends, it's the end of the year. And, at New Year's Eve, if you're not invited to a party, then you might be watching TV at home. And there's always those programs on TV that count down the big events of the year. The exciting events of 2023 worth celebrating. I don't know which is going to be the number one this year, but I imagine that right up there this year, at least in Australia, in terms of big, exciting events, will probably be the Matildas and that penalty shootout. Do you remember that? You remember the celebration? Remember the crowd screaming, people crying, hugging one another? It was amazing. I mean, no one could believe that we won that. I imagine that there might have been a celebration a bit like that happening in Isaiah's day within the walls of Jerusalem when God's people woke up that morning and discovered that somehow they had been saved. That they had been miraculously rescued by God. And friends, for us today, it is a far greater rescue than that. By a far more wonderful King, as we by His grace have been brought into His kingdom. So let's celebrate Him today, and each day may our lives be lived for His honour and His praise.